is only those who are expecting calls from the president who can leave their phones on. That is out. We've got one apology coming from Anton Albert. Can you submit my apology for this meeting to the chair? I have to attend a party meeting. That's Honorable Albert. Honorable Nyagemba and Honorable Lyon said they'll be a little bit late. So, Nicole, where are we starting? Let me ask the Honorable Member. Do we go to the parking lot of the LRA, or do we go into the Basic Conditions of Employment Act? Honorable Masuruma.
I think the last time the legal section of this meeting has people got to this agreement.
The A list. I mean the A, the working document. Professor, you are doing now?
Yes. I just want to say in a direct way support what has been said, because given the issues that we have parked on the LRA and the legal team has to clarify some, let's do those things so that when we move away from it, we know we've done and go to the BCA. Otherwise, we may forget some of the things that we put aside.
Opinion is
ready.
We don't want to rush people and then get half-baked opinions. Or actually stopping people in their tracks when they want to give us more information, and we say what is in your hand is enough, and then it explodes in our faces. And in the last few of the research, then nothing stops us from going into the Basic Conditions of Employment and then later into the LRA. Khalib, is it you or?
Thank you, Chair. The first part, that's the, what is it called? Is it the long title, or whatever you call it, of the BCA? I think my
Dr. Luz.
Thank you, Chair. We would just like to clarify, are we now dealing with the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, or would Chair like us to share our office position on the proposed amendments of Section 193 and 194 as proposed by the Department in the previous meeting? We thank you. We'll follow the lead of the committee, Chair.
If you are ready, then I think we should do that. But if there are some things that you need to polish, we can go into the basic conditions and then later or tomorrow open to the LRA. Yeah, and what does that say to you?
So we have a preliminary note that we handed out for circulation to the members on our office position, so we can comment on it. On 193 and 194 is the proposed amendment. This is our office position in the summary form. If the committee would like further elaboration, Chair, we can take back, but perhaps just to share our initial perspective on where we stand with this.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Our initial concern with the proposed amendments of Section 193 and 194 is Clause 38 in the expansion memorandum had specific objective what that clause was aimed to achieve. issues like incompatibility were raised, the department in orally commenting on clause 38 also mentioned the starting up of the CCMA as additional argument. As we read that proposed amendments now of section 193 and 194, the aims don't align to the issues highlighted, or does it specifically align to the issues highlighted in the explanatory memorandum? That was a concern to us, because when you look at whether there is an infringement and whether such an infringement is justifiable, you look at the purpose behind the action taken, the mischief that is being fixed by the proposed amendment. For us, that mischief and that purpose, the policy decision behind it, is not clear anymore. So we would like to propose that with the committee's permission that the new or the arguments placed in front of the committee for the redrafting and the additional angle that 193 and 194 appear to take, put the committee as an additional explanatory memorandum explanation for clause 38. But apart from that, our imbalance concerns remain. Because if we look at the clause itself, and one of your primary, apart now from purpose and whether the decision is rational, for that we need the policy basis outlined precisely, your justification for limitations also calls for consideration whether there is any less restrictive means by which this purpose can be obtained. And for us, it remains the same as previously stated that labor law itself, if you stick to the incompatibility argument as placed in the memorandum, that incompatibility argument, the context in which labor law functions currently, the code and the policies that employers can put in place, there is a less restrictive mean. It just comes down to proper management by employer and employee relationship. So that concern stands for us regardless of the proposed amendment. We have also highlighted, for us, there seems to be the power imbalance that labor law appears or aims to equal us. Remains. That imbalance remains with this clause or the proposed amendment, because you're basically allowing that, you're saying that regardless of an unfair dismissal on procedure or substance, reinstatement is not an option. So therefore the power balance shifts to the employer again, and that's open to abuse, especially if it's linked to remuneration. An argument that came out in our office discussions was you can always fix remuneration, because say now an employee is just 6,000 rand under the pressure that the benchmark to allow him to not be reinstated or reinstated as an option when it is an unfair dismissal. An employer can fix that. You can change the salary, there might be a bonus payout, there may be a way that employers can just to nudge up or down on the threshold that abuse is there, because it's going to be an easy opt-out for an employer to just give the money and not worry about whether he or she did the proper process or fair reason. So that abuse is still for us there. And then obviously it says to labor court or the arbitrator, so it's still, you're not unclogging the CCMA. That was an argument that was also raised. I think since now here the labor court or the arbitrator must require employees to reinstate or re-employ unless. So you're not taking it out of you're not freeing open a system. You're just giving an easy out to the employer still. And here then, apart from that, we also have some procedural concerns with the processing and the proposed clause that it runs 19 and 194. The amendments of those clauses went in the bill as tabled by the department. That means house permission will be required for the committee to process any additional committee amendments of this nature. The previous memorandum submitted to the House and approved only allows the committee to accept technical amendments such as changing Section 27, interim constitution reference to Section 23. These proposed amendments now, with 193 and 194, go to reinstatement and it goes into the substance of labor law. You're not dealing with the technical amendments. Therefore, the memorandum in which the House gave the committee permission to affect additional changes will not extend in mandate to these amendments. So if the committee decides ultimately, because the policy decision remains with the committee chair, if the committee decides ultimately that it wants to go this route, then another memorandum will have to be tabled in the House and additional permission will be granted. Along with that, we need to caution that public participation does not include these amendments. And there's a constitutional obligation on Parliament to make sure that public participation is given effect to. So that's a constitutional concern as well. If the committee gets permission to affect additional changes apart from the technical amendments allowed, and section 193 and 194 comes up for partial amendment, public participation consideration needs to be taken into account, and also perhaps just to, as an example, Chair, when the Rental Housing Amendment Bill came for a parliamentary committee, that it was republished after permission was granted for additional amendments and open to public participation to make sure that effect is given to that constitutional obligation. So far from the actual concerns we have that the power imbalance still shifts to the employer and that that is not justifiable in terms of the explanatory memorandum considerations we see, and as far as that's not supplemented, we also have to highlight constitutional concerns with regard to procedural issues that must be taken at all. Thank you, Chair.
I think we've moved a long way since last week. If you read last week objections from parliamentary legal officers, they were talking about the unconstitutionality of the proposal. That's what they were talking about. Now, what I'm hearing is that your memorandum, which can be changed to fit, does not explain the amendment that you are making. No, it's not an issue of constitutionality in terms of the proposal. Now, I'm happy about that move. There's no doubt that for us, we think this is a fair, if you might call it, discrimination. If we are going to argue that thresholds are not fair, then we must take all thresholds in our legislation. The BCA for the threshold, 187. Employers can move that threshold, can do the same thing that our colleagues are talking about. Section 198 has got a threshold. Now, if you're going to attack the threshold on the basis that employers can manipulate it, and therefore you should not have a threshold, then it means that you must take all the thresholds in our legislation, make all the changes in our legislation, take the threshold out. And I think for me, from what I'm sitting, is that that's not a legal issue. Not that we say that our legislation is illegal. It says that there is a possibility that what you do, the present threshold, the threshold is 183 BCA. If I'm earning 182.99 cents, I'm below that threshold. But that is different in a sense. That's the fact of the matter. When you put a threshold, you are either in that threshold, you are either out in that threshold. And that policy decision that we think is a fair policy decision. Now, in terms of the memorandum, this amendment is clear. Its intention is to discourage senior members going to the CCMA and challenge discrimination. That's what it's intended to do. And it's intended to say to senior members, to senior employees, that they must pause and ask a question. If I go to the CCMA, what am I going to get? Isn't it better for me to settle on this issue? Because if I go to the CMA, I'm likely to get 800,000. Why should I go in and fight the case? That's what this amendment tends to do. It says that then you should say the CMA, calculate the sums, and then say the best option is this. And this amendment meets that requirement. It does persuade senior members not to go through that and persuade them to settle. Therefore, we believe that the memorandum still captures that. Maybe there's still tweaking on it. We don't think the issue of tweaking on the memorandum can ever be a reason of rejecting a clause in a legislation, because the memorandum is not saying that. That you can fix. If our colleagues are saying this is illegal, this is unconstitutional, then let's talk about it. But that's not what they are saying now. They are saying the process could be unconstitutional. Well, that's the parliamentary process, that they say that if we want to go this route, the parliament must go back to parliament and get authority to amend the legislation. I don't know, I don't expect on those issues. My understanding is that the bill is put in front of you, members, that you are expected in terms of the law to consider the bill and make the necessary change. If it means getting that authority, then bill, get that authority, so that, because there are other areas that you still want to, you'd want to make amendments. And my suggestion is that why not get an overall authority from whoever must give members the authority if there's a need to amend the legislation. Not only in this area, there will be other areas. What are you going to do? Are you going now going to say because you do not have the authority, you cannot do that? And for me, that's the issue. But what I'm saying is that I think, unless I've heard it incorrectly, our colleagues are no more talking about the unconstitutionality of the proposal that is on the table. They are saying that as far as they're concerned, it's unfair, it can be manipulated. And that's the issue that's at the table. And I'm saying, Chair, on the changes and the process, how changes are made, we've got to make sure that, otherwise, if we're going to say we're going to make changes this bill here, then what's the purpose of having this discussion in front of you if you're not going to, if you need to make changes? I'm not even talking about this session. I'm talking other sections where you want to make changes on. And I'm saying that I don't think it's an event that that can be solved. You should get just the national authority so that you'll be able to do the right thing.
Thank you. We've got two issues on the table here. One is the process issue, and the other one is the constitutional issue. So, and we need to say which one comes first. For me, it's constitutionality, because we've got our legal team here to advise us as members of parliament that our input helping to change these bills on constitutionality, and if they are not, then that becomes a problem. Then we have to take steps and take certain decisions where we say, no, this is where we are going. And we can differ with our lawyers as well as we can differ with the department. But I think it all depends on us. But for now, I see that there are these two issues. Let us look at the constitutionality of the excluding others. What do they call it? Fair discrimination or unfair discrimination? Because the question of thresholds, they appear in many laws, you know. Like even in the national plan, I talk about the threshold of 300,000 rand, you know. And if it says that, it will mean then that those who are earning up or those who are earning below that will be treated differently from those who earn below. Above the 300,000. So, I said, let us engage on this issue of constitutionality. The process issues are not, process issues are, for me, are not very complicated issues. We know how to deal with such issues of process. Honorable members, Honorable Masrumule, Jokwe.
Thank you, Chair. I think those who were already born during Kodesa 1, Kodesa 2, so on and so forth, will remember the basic argument was about sufficient consensus in order to enable ourselves to move forward. I would want to suggest I'm not opposed to what the chairperson is trying to suggest, but my personal opinion would be, before we raise anybody's expectations on the wrongness and the rightness of what we are trying to achieve here, what if we were to suggest that the two parties can go to a disparate and try to find the grammar, the commas and the full stop. Mine is just the tinker thing. The commas and the full stop is part of it. Prepositions part of that. Before we come to that. That's what I'm saying.
We have thanks, Honorable Mutau.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question. Actually, it's sort of directly links with what Honorable Master Umar said, but I'll make it specific. Following what the department has said about the rationale, in other words, the intention, does that satisfy the comment, the remark about, you know, the underlying policy proposal? It is not clear. Is it clear now? Is it not clear? So that we can get to that point. And the other issue, which is of interest to me, specific interest, is the observation that even if we do tamper with 193 and 94 as it currently stands, it doesn't help the CMA process. My concern is always that, you know, we've got to try and unburden the CCMA so that we shouldn't do that. But if this doesn't do, then we need to think about it again. But indeed, I seem to feel there is a need for the department's lawyers and the legal advisors to wrap their heads around this thing. Because I don't think we as a committee will want to entertain any law that will be unconstitutional. So we've got to be clear that constitutionality is addressed so that we can be able to make, as I like to say, good law. Thanks, sir.
Other members, are there further comments on this one? Or should we, okay, Honorable Nyagamba, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry for being late. I tried to send an SMS to the committee secretary because there was a plane that was all blocking the route in our time. I think you all have seen the news. I got food because I was not in that plane. I was in another plane. No, he doesn't like me. It's not just because of the amendments. Years ago, historically. No, sir, I think the presentations are made. And now, listening to what the parliamentary legal advisors are saying, and also make comparison with what the department lawyers, when they came to make that justification, and at the same time, to look at the concerns that we had at that particular time, the question was, how are those concerns going to be dealt with by the department? Now, the lawyers now, they want to, but not intentionally so, but if one listens to arguments, each group of lawyers wants to persuade us. But ultimately, the decision rests with us. They can advise us in whatever way, but at the end of the day, an advice is not an instruction. I think we need to distinguish that. It's an advice that says, let's apply our minds, take into account what is it that they are presenting. I'm saying this because I just looked at Section 36 of the Constitution, Subsection 1. That indicates what is it that it has to be looked at, if then there are limitations. And you compare that with Section 23 on labor relations. And now, then the Constitution does not have the labor relations, but it is saying that these are some of the issues that need to be looked at hard. There must be law. There must be law that will make sure that Section 23 of the Constitution is applied. Now, I think what we are doing here, we are doing exactly that. Remember, the discussions, Chairperson, and I think we need to, I think also even the parliamentary legal advisors must also check what has been the President saying. When it comes to long cases that are not finished, he has been making an example about the public sector in particular on senior management, because there is no law that deals with that. Now the question is, are we not trying to do that? Because everything, whatever that happens, and particularly in the public sector, which it has to deliver services, anything that happens in that sector is a cut service delivery. Now, what are we for? What is government for? Is for service delivery. I think this issue of today, lawyers of the department come here and make a presentation, and then legal advisors of parliament, now we will go and look at this matter, and then when they come back, they come with other legal terms. And I think it must come to an end. It must come to an end, I think, the way Honorable Mudau has suggested. That if it is that they must go and meet the lawyers of the department, let it be. When they come here, they mustn't come here, the other group present in the absence of the other one, then the other one present in the absence of the other one. No. I don't think that will be a correct way. But the point I am emphasizing, Chair, is that is Section 23 of the Constitution, in terms of this amendment, prohibiting that those who earn above the threshold, in their cases, justice will not be done, because the limitation talk about reasonable, justifiable, all those things. Now, if this amendment, I want to hear that, if this amendment is not in line with Section 23 of the Constitution, what about the other thresholds that exist, where those who are earning above 183,000 per annum, they are not supposed to be paid overtime. They are not. And their working hours are not fixed like those who are below 183,000 per annum. So I'm saying that these need to be passed, because if they are not, really will be made to make decisions that do contradict with other parts of the legislation. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Nyakembaba. See, the reason why we have three teams is each of these teams have a role to play, and that's per mandate from their division. The parliament lawyers, their emphasis is more on others and the state law advisors too, and the department's lawyers. But ultimately, whatever input that they have, they've got to give it to us, those input to this committee, so that we can make our own determination after having listened to the input from the lawyers. And nothing stops us from again referring matters to both lawyers to engage on their own until they find a favorable solution that is favorable to us. And if they don't, they can still give us that feedback, and then we can, based on those inputs, we can finally make our own determination, starting back from the first day when we engaged up to the last day when they met on their own and then gave us feedback. It's still, the decision lies with us. We've got to be convinced that the decision that we're taking is constitutional, even if we are not lawyers, but we are politicians. And if this thing makes a political sense to us, and we think and are convinced that it is not clashing or it's not in contravention of the Constitution, we can take such a decision. And if we're convinced about it, then nothing stops us from doing that. And I don't know what we're going to do. I've seen a hand from the parliament's lawyers.
Thank you, Chair. It was just with regard to your comments, Mr. Department, in response to us, I would just like to clarify that we neither made an adjudgment for a conclusive one on the constitutionality, because as we said from the beginning, for you to be able to determine whether Section 23 is being limited and justifiably so in terms of the Constitution, you need to have clear, it needs to be clearly stated what the purpose behind that limitation is. That's why the comment at the beginning, it would be beneficial to both the committee and to us, the department, put in writing that their amended justification to supplement what is said in the expanded memorandum, because our previous concern to constitutionality was based on the arguments and the basis and the justifications presented in the explanatory memorandum, Chairperson. But yeah, we are, as parliamentary legal advisors, our clients, our parliament and the committee members, that's our primary interest to advise on constitutionality, so we will take instruction from you, Chair, and committee as to way forward.
Thank you. What do we do with this one? Are we bringing it again? And then maybe to refer to our different caucuses? Or do we take a 10-minute caucus break? Let's take a 10-minute caucus break. And then we'll reconvene after 10 minutes. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Honorable members, 10 minutes is long gone. On this matter, I'll say that the department need to write a motivation, explanatory note, explaining why there is this that this thing is not discriminatory. It's not negative actually, and there should be enough motivation to convince whoever has doubts that we've got the best intentions. On the question of process, I think this is what worries me now. On the process, we advertise the bills and section 194 and 93, they were part of the bills when they were dealt with. And if we want to make further changes, I don't know why should we take this one to public hearings. I need to be convinced because I think that we have done enough on public hearings. This could be done with the kind of memorandum that we wrote to Parliament earlier. Let's talk to the process. Dr. Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, our concern lies in the bill. If only a certain section of the LRA was proposed for amendment, so clause 41 in the Labour Relations Amendment Bill speaks to section 191, and then from there it jumps to section 198. So the section that is now proposed by the department for amendment actually falls in the gap of what was put to the public for comment. And it may actually be beneficial if there are sections offered to the public now for all the issues that are being highlighted here to get comments and clarification, but that's for this committee to decide, Chair. But our main concern is the document that was published and presented to the public and on which they then came back with comments did not specifically indicate or direct them to take into consideration the scope of Section 193 and 194 and the impact of possible amendments thereto. But for that reason, Chairperson, we are cautioning that public participation is also a constitutionality concern and that the public must be sufficiently involved in considerations that, or in clauses and parts of a bill that is put to Parliament for amendment. And there is a gap here. From clause 41 to 42, the bill itself, as before the committee, did not speak to those clauses, Chair. That's where our concern and the risk lies. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other hands from the members? Honourable Mutau.
Thank you. Indeed, that was the point, the exact point I was going to raise. There is definitely a gap here. And 193, 194 are not referred to in this bill. Yeah. So that was my concern. It's a major concern for me.
Okay.
My question is going to be this. If we go through public hearing, and as a department we say, Parliament and as a department we say, our intention is to streamline the work of the CCMA. We think that we need to restrict senior managers in the CCMA. Members of the public may comment on the issue. The principles that one thing is known. And then we come here in Parliament. After a discussion, the Parliament says to us and to members, they say, yes, you can do what you want to do, but we think that don't amend Section 5 in doing that. Instead, amend Section 6. Now, let's assume that Section 6 was not an issue to be amended, but as a debate, a decision taken that do exactly what you want to do, but you can capture what you want to do by not amending Section 5, amend Section 6. Now, the argument that is put here is that irrespective of what you want to do, if you amend a different section, now it's about the section, not the intention of what you want to do. I want members to listen to what I'm saying. I'm saying we go to public hearing, we say we need the principle that we need to do. We need to make sure that senior managers write in a curtail in the CCMA. That's the intention. That's what debated. You had public hearings, you had parties commenting on that principle. So then you say, you're not in a position in this team. Parties commented on the principle. You have many comments around that area. What is happening now here in this proposal is that you can do the same thing. But instead of amending 6, amend 7. Now, we have been told, you have been told that if you do that, you're going to go back to public hearing because no more amending 6 now, you amend 7. That's what is being said. And I do not think it's right. I do not think it's right. The issue is, if what we're raising is totally new, has never been raised, I might understand that. But let us take an example of, use an example of the information here now. It's been debated in the NCOP. There are so many changes that are made in that bill. In all respect, the issue is about protecting whistleblowers. If the bill said you take out the whistleblowers by amending Section 8, and NSOB agrees that we want to protect whistleblowers, let's not amend 8, let's amend 10. I say, go back to public hearings on those issues. I just don't believe the correct members. But as I've said initially, I'm no lawyer. But that's what we're doing. That's what this amendment is doing. The issue of whether the memorandum explains now the proposal that we made, how does it fit in? We agree with that. We look on the memorandum and explain it, but we really do not believe that every time members make changes in the bill, as long as the changes that you are making in the bill are in keeping with what you said you wanted to do in the public hearing, then members of the public have commented on it. I believe it's within the constitution of members to make that change. But
thanks, Mr. Kripp. other members to still want to have a bite on this one.
Yes, sir.
Honorable Mutano.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I hear Mr. Mkanipe and I really empathize with him. My question is this. We effect amendments. Okay? Here we go through the process and everything is done. And then they are published in the Gazette. And there are changes to 193 and 194, section 193 and 194, which were never published to the public to see. Where do we go from there? I mean, anybody can challenge us and say, guys, this is subterfuge. You came to us and you published this document and we work on this document. And now suddenly you made changes to 193 and 194, unless we intend not to touch 193 and 194. But if we did that, anybody could then challenge us and say, you never told us you're going to work on 193 and 194. This is my concern. I think I just need to be clarified on this one. If 193 and 194 come back as they are, I have no problem. But if there are any changes to them, then I think somebody could catch us out on those.
Honorable Masurumur.
I used to be a student of communication in the past. The most effective way to come to a decision is basically only the four people. Why don't they go to the prospect and come up with something different from what they say? Because we might end up remaking the law, restarting the process, I'm afraid.
There are no serious constitutionality issues. I think my main worry is more with the process. And if you say that when this public notice was given and the bill was published, given over to people, these sections were not meant to be dealt with in that. And it later came, as we're engaging, that no, actually we have to look at this 193 and 194. But they were not put on public for public comments. You know. That is my understanding. I just want to get that one. Let us just go for this one. Was 93 and 92 this 93 and 92 were they part of those or not? I think that is what we need to talk to now. Because if they were not, then it would mean that we have to do public invite people for public inputs, for public hearings. We have just put out an advert now dealing with others. Nothing stops us from putting another advert. Rather than make mistakes on the process and then have to do it now, this time with as an instruction from above, coming from Tokoza, coming from all these other people. I don't know, remember, let's just talk to that one. Let me give over to the lawyers and then Ms. Williams.
Thank you. I don't want to claim to be an expert in parliamentary procedure. I think I'll leave that to my learned colleague here on my right. But what I do want to bring to the committee's attention is a very important case, which was a turning point in our country, the Tugard matter. It dealt with the Communal Land Rights Bill. The Communal Land Rights Bill initially tried to set 5 bills. And then they struck the whole bill down. They declared the whole bill unconstitutional. Not because only of the substance in the bill, but because of the procedure. So I just want to say that when you look at public participation, I don't think we must discount the importance of public participation. Public participation is such an essential, I would say, it's an important principle of our constitution or of our democracy. And the court, the Constitutional Court, the highest court in our land, has attached so much value and so much weight to public participation that the piece of legislation as important as the Communal Land Act, Bill or Act, whatever it is, and a piece of so much needed legislation, that bill, I would say, is long overdue. We so much need that. But in spite of all that, the Constitutional Court has cut it down just because of public participation. And even that court case, as confusing as it may be with controversial as it may be, because I think especially as legislative drafts when it comes to trading, that bill has just turned what we usually used to do upside down. Because before, when you trade a piece of legislation, we used to use the Canadian model, which speaks of first and substance. So when we take, we look at, we haven't used, our democracy is still very young, so we haven't fully developed the jurisprudence when it comes to taking legislation, classifying, and that's why many times we have lots of disagreements or different conclusions with our colleagues on the right regarding the tagging because of the Dungan case. It basically speaks, the Canadian model speaks to the first and substance. So Ghanaian now changes that, it speaks to a substantial measure. But when you look at any of the competencies of the bill as to what the bill deals with, we don't just see, okay, it deals with one of these list items in this case of the bill, and therefore we take. We just applied it very mechanically in the past before Tonga came along. And what the Constitutional Court did, that developed the jurisprudence and said, no, we're not Canada, we're not that democracy. We look at the substantial measure test, and also when we do that, we take into account of how South African lived reality, how things are here, how it's different, how our democracy different from that democracy. And on that basis, the court has attached so much weight to public participation that they've cut down an important piece of legislation just based on that alone, because it's found today to be taken 76, but by taking the 75, you short-circuit the ball and don't have as much public participation as the 76. So with regard to the parliamentary process, I guess our law advisors can come back to us on that, because I don't want to give a verdict on that or judgment on that, because I'm not absolute regarding the processes. But I just want to say, with public participation, don't discount the importance of it because of the Tonga judgment. And also another thing that I just want to point out is that when you have the public participation, that could also bring to the fore more issues that were raised, or issues beyond the scope of their thinking, my thinking, our thinking. But it may bring other issues which we may not have considered, and I think that's important of public participation. So that when the committee makes a decision, the decision is more informed and informed of the views of the public. Whatever the committee ultimately decides, don't need to take into what the public says, but the committee has a mind of its own. But at least it's informed by what the views raised outside is. So I'm not going to say the committee must go with public participation or not go with public participation. I'm saying don't discount the importance of public participation. Thank you.
Input from Ms. Williams, state law, our state law advisor. What do we do? Public participation or no public participation? I've heard from Mutawa, I don't think you need to motivate her on this one. I think your point is made, unless you are bringing something new. Honorable Founder of the Desert.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the first thing that we must establish in this committee is there political support for this amendment? Because it's no use having all the legal arguments and public participation, and eventually when people go to their caucuses, etc., and they come back, and then they vote against this amendment. This special dispensation for high-earning employees. Have we established that this idea carries the necessary support from the various political parties? That is the first thing. Because once we have ascertained that, once we know that we support the department on this point, because I have heard some dissent at previous meetings from other political parties, members here in the committee saying, no, you know, we cannot let this pass. So for me, it's just important, before we go on a wild goose chase and processes that will delay the bill, etc., let's first get together and say to each other, will we politically support the idea? Then how we give flesh to it, I think that is the second question.
Are there other comments on this one before I make a ruling? Honorable Nyakemba.
Sir, I think we have judged with the constitutionality of the amendment itself. Now we are on process. I think that's the issue now. How do we process this amendment? I think the speaker before me, and he mustn't continue to do this. Of reading my mind, I'm not sure what is it. What kinds of instruments is he using in order to read my mind? Because for me to take a decision here as to whether do we go to public or not, it must be politically informed. Because the amendments, it's not just amendments, because there's a need of amendments, they are informed by politics. I'm suggesting that you don't make a ruling that says which route do we take. That route which will be decided must be politically informed. So let's go back to our political principles in terms of this issue. Remember earlier my argument was that we must also look at what has been the president saying in the state in the corner. So it's important, I think those are the politics that the oral group member raised, even if it's not necessarily to look at what has been the president saying. But at the same time, say politically, what is it that we want to see at the end of the day? We are politicians. We are not lawyers, we are not administrators, we are politicians. We must be politically informed. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir, for the Honorable Masrumur.
Yeah, Chair. Some of us are not politicians. I'm a voice lecturer, and I don't have a career in politics. Yeah. Chair, I want to suggest a reconciliation. Flowing from what Honorable Nyagamba is saying, originating from the previous speaker before Nyagamba, let us quickly head first go into our caucus, to our principles, and see as to whether when we come back we might not come back with a different view. Because we are speaking politics now.
This matter is going to be parked, but not in the public parking lot. It will be parked in another parking lot. That is the political parking lot, the political parking lot. And then I hope that before the end of next week we'll be having the. Our lawyers are going to be. They are leaving for Namibia next week. That is the permanent lawyers. And during that period, we can do, give everybody, all the lawyers, a leave, some leave of sort. And then we can deal with the convention and some of the international reports that we want to give to Parliament. The ones on HIV at the workplace and others, maritime, domestic workers' conventions. So, and that in the meantime, those who are remaining can be able to heavy enough to apply their minds to some of the legal challenges and constitutional issues that we're dealing with on this. So this matter is in a different parking lot until further notice. And where to from here? Was it the only issue that is in the parking on the LRA? Okay, then let's move on to the PCA. Yes, sir.
I thought there was an issue the last time about going through this certain document as well as chapter plus one we agree as well as plus two we agree, something like that. I thought the last time when you passed you were on this one.
This was remunerating in aspect for last week. Are we ready to do that? We don't have to if we are not ready. Because then we can use this time to get the PCA. Are members ready to engage on this one, or should we just hop into the basic conditions and then later we can deal with it next week? I'm waiting for guidance on this one. Okay, there is none. Honorable Degem.
Yes, sir. These things are very scarce in Limpopo. especially, it is the same as water. Yeah, sir. I think the point that was raised last, which Honorable Masef Solomola is referring to. There are areas in the working document that say there is no legal issue on this one, there's no legal issue. I think that then the basis of going back is for some kind of work to be done on the LRA base. That this is how is it going to reflect as a result of the discussions. If there are still other areas where there's no consensus on, but that to reflect in order the first draft to be submitted to us again with a view of making a final decision once we'll be looking at the first draft. So if that is the understanding, sir, fine, let's go that way. Thank you.
There's nothing new. Let's move on. Page one. We're working with the working draft one. No, the LRA. At least we are making some progress. If we are going, that route, there will be some progress registered. Dr. Lewis, are we using the working document one? Am I talking to the right document?
The chairperson, the original one, which, if I understand right, it would be the clauses now with no legal issues. Yes, chairperson, on which a committee will be required to take policy decisions.
Within the
written
document.
Yes, in the document, indeed.
Like our flag. Okay, back to the first thing, board document. Dr. Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. Just clarification, must I take the committee through clause by clause again, and then the committee will indicate to my colleague from the State Law Advisor as to the A-list. Chair, with clause 1, it will be a policy decision required by the committee if we identify no legal issue. If there is no, if the committee requires any policy-based amendments, that will then be reflected in the A list, but we take instructions from each chairperson and the committee members.
That's it, honourable members. Are there issues here? No legal issues. No legal issues. And then if there's something that needs to be, if the appointed members want to make, they can make that doing when we go clause by clause, because we have to go even through these ones, even where there are no legal issues, when we go clause by clause, we'll have to do that. But if there's an issue that a member wants to raise, that may need further information, can I get me more information on clause 1, subsection 3? Then you can have such a request, and then when we get to that part next in the next 2 weeks, that issue could be dealt with. Is that in order? Okay, I'm listening at the same time. I'm talking to the body language too. So don't worry. Don't see when I say, oh no, we agree. It's the royal we. After speaking my body language with the members. Thank you very much. Honorable Nyagema, on clause 1.
Yes, sir.
Or on the process?
No, that's on clause 1. I think we agreed. Ada, I wanted to hear you on the record as the chair that for us to agree now is for the state law advisors and parliament, if they are going to be jointly. Doesn't necessarily say we want after the first round we won't go to cross by cross. And I like that one. So we agree.
Yeah, but if there's an issue that members need to raise, you can raise it now rather than wait for the day when we go line by line. But doesn't stop members from raising issues then. But it would be nice if they are raised now, because then we'll know where to search for more information. Clause 2. Dr. Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. With clause 2, similarly, no legal issues identified.
Then issue that member will want to be flagged for discussions in the... Okay, nothing. No issue for now. Yes, Dr. Lewis.
We had no legal issues identified there. The proposed amendment was resulting from the issues our colleagues of the department highlighted to the committee that the request was made that the committee members to consider amending the 60 days to 90 days by which the minister must act or give effect to responsibilities, or the added responsibilities now in that section. So there's a proposed amendment, Chair, but it will require a policy decision from the committee, not a legal based decision. Thank you, Chair.
Did we engage on this one last week? The 60 and the 90, because if there's an agreement on it, we can put it as an agreement then. Khalif.
There was a concern by members in the issue of the 60 days, etc. There's another way of doing it. You could write the section in such a way that the 60 days start kicking after the public comments. You could either put 90 days or you could say the 60 days in terms of law. Because remember what we're doing now, we say the minister must have public comments on extension of an agreement. And you could either say the 60 days still apply, but that 60 days only start kicking after the public comments. Because if the minister says the public comment is for a month, the 60 days will kick in after a month. It's still the same, it makes the same 90 days in terms of that. Those are two ways if the members, because the last time they were worried that if we increase the 60 days to 9 was that indication. And I'm saying there is another way of doing the same thing. It just giving a space for the public hearing and saying when does the 60 days start kicking in and then it remains 60 days. For me, it's either two of them, but I don't think we'll be happy with 90 days either.
Oksalayo. Oh, this isn't in, it's in English. Oksalayo. I think it's clear that we all agree that 60, this is not enough. You know, the agreement is that we have to take either 60 days, no, 90 days, and or come up with these technicals. And there's no serious debate there. I think we should move on. Nyagemba.
Yeah, sir, I'm worried with 90 days, really. It worries me because whether the department can deny, but the fact of the matter is that if there's a bargaining council agreement, a collective agreement, in most instances, that agreement is agreement that is within the industry, that particular industry. But you will have establishments that are not party to the bargaining council itself, hence the issue of the accession. Now, what worries me, Chair, is that for us to say within 90 days, even the technicality that Mr. McCarthy is coming up with, to say after the comments by concerned parties, meaning by those establishments that are not part of the bargaining council, that's when now if we maintain the 60 days, it's, that's when 60 days start counting. I'm worried, Chair, because the experience is that employers will make it a point that come the day when now the department is extending the collective agreement, that's when whatever improvements has been made in that collective agreement, that's when it will start. What is the implications are such that establishments will now try to find a way of getting out of the bargaining council itself in order for them now to be covered by the tap or whatever term that will be taken by the department, by the minister, to extend. As my word is, I want the department to say, will that happen or not? I think Mr. Kalibi knows the trend in the metal industry used to be what an agreement has been reached. When it is extended to non-parties, to the metal industry bargaining council, those conditions that were improved were protected from the 1st of July each year. But of late, that did not happen, and it raised dissatisfaction. So, don't think we want to be part of that. And that's, Mr. McCarthy, Chair, through you, can explain himself on this.
So, for input from the members before I give over to Mkali. Okay, I just hope it's not your old bells in the labor movement. don't find them in the committee. Mkali, be over to you.
Chair, I mean, we are in a case of two situations. We making a proposal in the law to make sure that parties who are not members of the bargaining council have what some say in the content of the bargaining council agreement before it's published. And we think that amendment is a positive one, it's a fair one, it's in keeping with transparency in terms of our constitution. Now, the problem we're having is that when we do that, we're eating all the time that the minister has got to publish the agreement. And that is why we're making the proposal that we need to, the members need to look at the issue of the time. And the publication of the notice for comment is normally a month's notice when we publish for comment. And the proposal that we're making is that it's not when the public hearings or the notice when that date, if the minister says, I intend to publish the matter of the council has requested that I extend the public, a collective agreement to cover all parties in the matter sector. And this collective agreement deals with increases wages by 2%. It introduces these new conditions. Now, I'm calling all interested parties to comment on my intention to extend this agreement to apply to other parties. And I'm calling them to comment by the end of July. And the proposal that I'm putting now is that let's say the Metal Banking Council give us, and there's no requirement to have the month in the first place. We can have the comments for 2 weeks. We can have the comments for 2 weeks, we can have them for a month. But we think that the ballpark is going to be around a month to give the other party an opportunity. Now, we're discussing with the council, and we've had a long discussion with all the councils, even before the proposal. First, the council themselves do not oppose this proposal. We have not had a position by the council, not even in the public hearing, in our interaction with the council opposing this proposal. And we said to council that even if this proposal does not come through, in terms of law, the minister cannot backdate her decision. If she extends an argument, she can't say the wages will be applicable as from January. Because the implication of that, you making honest employers who did not intend to contravene the agreement, contravene it for 6 months because the agreement now is all of a sudden dated. And in terms of law, the minister can't do that, can't dictate the decision. That we discussed, and the Banking Council has agreed on that. And we said Banking Council, guys, we've got to start negotiations well in time. You've got to give us your proposal in time so that we can factor it within that period. Now, it's going to be difficult to give guarantees that all Banking Council will give us the requirement to publish on time. If Banking Council give us the requirement on time, there's no reason why we should not publish on time. We have never not published on time. What happens is that Banking Council, the parties of the Banking Council do not agree. They reach an agreement a week before the agreement expires. They reach an agreement. They submit the agreement. Now they expect us to publish that agreement within that period and cover the past period. Most of the time, the people that are to blame for Banking Council agreement arriving in our offices very late against their own country. If the agreement is expiring on the 31st of March, Banking Council should have written agreement 60 days before that. That document should be in our department 60 days before that. If we are not able to extend an agreement because it was there 60 days before that, then we're at fault. And we've never done that. It's always because Banking Council give us the agreement late to publish. And we don't have choice. Publication process takes time, we've got to scrutinize the document. It's only when Banking Council do what is right in terms of the law and give us the documents in time that we'll be able to give a guarantee that we will never publish an agreement outside. It's not about the 60 days, it's about their own agreement. Remember, Banking Council agreement will say this agreement expires on the 31st of March. Now, if you want a new agreement, it's got to come in before the 31st of March. Now, if you want that agreement to be published and meeting that 60 days, because the minister must look at that agreement, does it meet the requirements of the law? Are the parties representative in terms of that agreement? Sometimes the kind of agreement that we receive are such that we can't publish them. We've got to go back to the council to correct some of the mistakes that are in the agreement. And all of those are the responsibility of the council itself. And that's what causes the delay. It's not the 60 days. And the only reason that we want to be able to meet this is because now, if we are going to publish, it's going to mean 60 days, 30 days. Now, let us just make an example. If it's 30 days, the minister says, I'm giving intention to publish this agreement, and I'm giving parties 30 days to comment. 30 days. And then we must go back and scrutinize the information. Let us say we finish scrutinizing the information in a week after 30 days. We go to government printers for printing. Now, the time it takes for government printers and the cost is involved. This new one government printers and this document has this thing to be published, it's not one page. This thing. If we want government printers to publish within a week, it increases the cost, unbelievable, for the department. But if we want government printers to publish within 2 weeks, you give them notice, they'll publish in 2 weeks, it drops the cost. Now we've got to look at all of those issues in publishing, and we most of the time have a problem, not because of the 60 days, not because of even the 90 days. Now, it's because bargaining council submit the information late. If you can solve that problem, we wouldn't have anything to worry about, whether it's 60 days or 90 days. But the problem is that we're not able to do that.
But what you're saying is that even if we make it 80 days, if they are to present things late, it's not going to solve the problem.
So what I'm saying is that it's not going to solve the problem of publishing their agreement. It will solve the problem in terms of publishing within 60 days, but it's not going to solve the issue that Honorable Nyegema is raising. It's got nothing to do with 60 days. It's got something to do with when the agreement expires. If the agreement expires on the 31st of March, and we receive the agreement in March, it doesn't matter how many days you've got. We are not going to meet that date, that date. For workers, the workers must get an increase on the 1st of April, because the agreement expires on the 31st of March. For us to be able to do that, there's a lot of work to do. Therefore, we must get that agreement basically in January for us to publish, to make sure that workers get that agreement. Now, bargaining councils don't do that. And I'm saying that's what is the problem here in terms of this date. It's not about the 60 days or the 90 days. It's about the processes in bargaining council. As I said, we've had a lot of discussions, but the situation is improving. Bargaining council understand and accept that they will not get date of the decision, because it's illegal. If the minister does that, she'll be taken on review, and she's likely to lose that case.
Chairman, with that explanation, the issue is about bargaining councils submitting collective agreements very late to the department. So there's no need now to increase from 60 days to 90 days, if that is the issue. Because, all of us, we have been observing bargaining processes in all the industries. It's very rare that you will find that parties reach agreement 3 months before the expiry of the collective agreement itself. That is very rare. So what is clear in terms of the explanation, there is no need of increasing the 60 days to 90 days on the explanation that has been given. If then is the department that must go to bargaining councils, encouraging them to settle before time, let it be. But the issue of the 60 days, on the basis of the explanation, there's no need to increase, sir.
Honorable Masumu.
Yes, sir. What exactly is the problem here? Because it's a line, sometimes they don't pronounce the same, but they sometimes they don't understand. What is the difference? The zero, the such, the shade, the half under, what is it?
Yeah, the sense that they say 6-9, I think if we are to fix the bargaining councils, we need to do that. But we are not dealing with bargaining councils now. And where do they report these bargaining councils? Okay.
Well, bargaining council are private institutions. They report to the Department of Labor as far as the law requires them to report in terms of financial arrangements and representatives and all of those issues. But in terms of their own operation, when they start negotiations, that's their decision. And what they decide to do, as long as it's within the parameters put on by the Labor Relations Act. Or those areas that they must report, that the LRA expect them to report on, which is audited financial statements, membership figures of trade unions, they report the department on those areas. But on the issue of taking decisions, they take decisions for themselves.
Because you see, my problem is that justice delayed is justice denied. And if if for instance there's a favorable thing happening there and it gets delayed because people are giving matters, they're giving reports very late, it does affect the workers negatively. So what do you suggest we do? There was this suggestion that you mentioned earlier, good. It would be, let's say, after the presentation, then we count 60 days from then. Or do we say we edit this 90 days? Because even if you edit this 90, if people are bringing issues late, they'll actually bring them on the 89th day. You know? But if we say maybe 60 days after the presentation, then maybe it will make some sense. I thought maybe let us engage on that one. Honourable members and gentlemen, there's this view, there's the other suggestion that came from you, from the department. Honourable Mother.
Sir, as I understand it's a practical thing. Mm. As I understand it, the practical thing is you have 24 hours in a day, and you can only do so many things in 24 hours. And the department says, as the matter stands now, we need an extra 30 days to be able to do this, which makes it 90. All right? However, if you can't give us 90, give us a leeway to say that our 60 days will start ticking from when we have published. I have no issue with any of these things because from where we sit is that the department must be able to do what is necessary to be done within a given stipulated time. So either way, we are easy.
Who is uneasy? Let's move on this one. We will get to it when we go there because I don't think we should stop movement forward because we can agree about 6-9. As we're learning 6-9 and then 4-9. 4-5. Okay. No, sure. Thanks. Clause 4.
Thank you, John. Clause 4, no legal issues identified. It remains a policy decision with the committee. Thank you, John.
Any issue that we want flat? Okay, none. Clause 5.
Thank you, Chair. With Clause 5, we just did explanatory a note linking the bargaining council proceeds and levies to that of the CCMA and relevant provisions. But that's what it's explanatory in that it's not a legal issue. It remains a policy decision with the committee whether that clause should be included or not. Thank you, Chair.
Is there an issue where members need more information or advice on this clause? Let's move on. Clause 6.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to clause 6, our initial concerns, we supplemented by stating that clause 8 appears to be sufficient to deal with concerns related to the 1956 use of ballots, but inclusion of ballot or not remains a part of the decision for the committee today. Thank you, Chair.
We went through this one. Members, is then if that will still want to flag further on this one? Except what we have flagged earlier. Okay. Clause 7.
Thank you, Chair. With clause 7 then also similarly no legal issues identified. It remains a policy decision.
Are there other issues that members would like to raise on this one? Flagging something, wanting more information, nothing. Clause 8.
Chair, perhaps just to assist the committee with time and protesting, we have identified clause 8 to 12 as not having any legal issues identified.
We have got to
close.
Yeah, clause by clause.
Chair, then clause 8, no legal issues identified.
Is there any issue that member would like to raise to be flagged on this one? If not so, then clause 9.
identified?
Are there matters that members want to raise to be flagged? Okay. Clause 10.
Also, Chair, no legal issues identified. Matter policy decision.
Are there issues that members want to raise or flag on this? Okay, 11.
Also, no legal issues identified.
Are there issues that members would like to raise? 12.
Similarly, with 12 chairperson, no legal issues identified.
Issues that members want to raise, if not so, 13.
For 13, we just highlighted that the practice to which that court speaks, binds with the IELTS identification and Article 3 of the corresponding convention, but that doesn't mean planning effect.
Apologies, Chair. With clause 13, we just highlighted that the content of the clause speaks to a similar approach that the ILO has identified in Article 3 of the corresponding convention, but no legal issues identified. That was a mere explanatory note. It is for the committee to decide from a policy perspective whether it is agreed or not. Thank you, Chair.
Is there any other issue that a member want to be looked at before we... our engagement, okay. Clause 14.
Clause 14, Chair, we just highlighted a question posed by the committee as to the role of Parliament and the checks and balances and why Parliament have a role when financial implications are linked to essential services, but that was just an explanatory note. It doesn't affect the content of the clause as is.
So
there's no legal issue there identified,
Chair.
It's just a policy decision for the committee.
Is there an issue that members want to flag on this one? Next. Clause 15.
Clause 15, then, Chair, there's also no legal issues identified. Is there any that
member left? Next. Clause 16.
Clause 16, also check if no legal issue identified.
Is there any issue that a member would like to flag on this one? Next. Mr. Khalid.
In the last time that we had a discussion on this, there were changes that were proposed on clause 15. Remember, this was the issue about the fees, whether the fees should be the first on the line, and also the change that we proposed in 5. Sub 5. Oh, that's right.
Clause 16. Clause 16,
Chairperson,
of
no legal issues identified.
Are there members who like to raise or flag for further discussion? Next. Clause 17.
Thank you, Chair. Going to the discussions on the 17. Thank you, Chair.
Advocate Gordon.
Thank you. Clause 17, Chair, during the discussions, what we raised in the working document was essentially the concern by members in respect of the charge of the fees of the administrator. During the discussions, I think the members gave a preliminary direction that the draft as proposed on page 5 of the working document should be taking shape by deleting the proposed sub D. And also, I think one of the members raised that in C we should look at the issue of the fee of the administrator should not really be against the assistant, so that requires a redraft, and that will come back to the committee when the A list is presented, should the committee members give that direction today. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other issues that members want to flag on this? If not so, Mr. Malik. Let's move on to
Just to point out also that in clause 17, sub 5, just to place it on record, that there were changes proposed to sub 5, where the committee members said what we should look at in the draft is that the application should not be brought by the administrator, but it should be an application limited to the Register of the Trade Union or the employer's organization to take away the abuse of a lengthy time of administration. Thank you, Chair.
But more time on this one. Clause 18. Honourable Van der Leyen.
Okay, may I just point out that during the public hearings, one of the parties commented on clause 18 that this may be in conflict with ILO standards. And unfortunately, I'm not that okay with the ILO standards, so I was wondering if the legal team could just look into that. It was a submission by Solidarity. Thank you.
They are not in favor with what?
During public hearings, we were, as a committee, informed that clause 18 and what is proposed there is not in line with apparently ILO international standards. And unfortunately, I've been unable to really get around, you know, that argument. And I was just wondering if the people who know the ILO standards and conventions that we subscribe to, if they would be able to comment to that, because it may be a legal issue as well, eventually.
Mr. Kalib.
The problem is that I really don't know which standard they were talking about. I mean, ILO has got many standards, you know, and to just come in and say, well, in conflict with standards, and you don't say which standard, then it becomes difficult even to respond. That's why we just ignored it, because if they were serious, they would have said this ILO standard and freedom of association on this, on that, on that, on that. The fact that they do not indicate to us, but to us indicated that they are not serious about that. They are trying that they lack.
And what we can do that during the public hearings is that if people want to make further follow-ups or asking further questions, they were free to do that. They were given 2 weeks, and I don't remember ever receiving anything further. Origin of that effect. I think we should move on. Clause
19. Secretary, with clause 19, we just had a brief explanatory note as commenting on the recent judgments given in the by the Royal Society of Northern Provinces, Minister of Labour and others. Got the CDMA rules in the relevant section, but we identified no legal issues with the wording of the section I proposed to the committee, therefore it remains a policy decision if to include, to accept or reject to committee society. Thank you.
Are there matters that members want to add on the to be discussed notes next? Let's move on to clause 20.
Chair, of clause 20, we just had a comment that if whatever the committee decides is to assist with regarding to ballots, that decision will possibly have consequential effect on other clauses, such as clause 20, which also makes reference to balloting systems. So the one decision will ultimately affect other chairs, but that is a policy decision and no legal issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Clause 22.
The way 21 is phrased is a deletion, but the deletion is linked to the committee's acceptance of clause 22. At clause 22, we identified no legal issues. Thank you, Chair.
If there are matters that members want to raise on clause 22, you can flag them now. Okay, next, clause 23.
Thank you, clause 23, then also no legal issues identified.
Is there any issue that we remember or like us to flag for further discussions? Next. Clause 24.
and Chair Tosin for all the learning which you've identified.
Members, are there issues that you would like to flag for next discussion? If not, so close to that.
Thank you, Chair. Of course, 25, during committee deliberations, it was noted that there is an error, and it has been just proposed that the four times be deleted in the proposed clause 25, referencing section 147. But it's an error, it's a drafting error, it's not a technical one, not a substantive one.
Is there something that members would like to flag for discussion next time? Okay, next. Clause 26.
Thank you, Chair. With clause 26 and similarly, no legal issues identified.
Honorable Funder, let's say that.
Can I just ask, there's just the one thing. In the amendment book, it says the director, and there was some debate regarding whether it should be the director or whether it should be the commission, and perhaps we can, you know, today indicate that for the A-list, you know, when that vision is compiled, what words the committee would propose to be used in there.
Mr. Mkhani.
Actually, that's what I was going to raise. Discussed last time, it's not here or there, and we'll be heading with the commission. There was one party, Fedusa, felt that we should be referring to the commission, to the director. If it's going to make them happy, we don't have a problem. It's not here nor there.
Let's give over to Ms. Williams.
Thank you. I think we would say the same thing now, yes, that the word identifying in the Labour Nations as to include the head of commission, the director may be more appropriate to use because it's the word that you've already defined. So I think also the agency, because the commission consists of members, and that way director specifies to when the commission deals with that. It's the same like court cases like a JP or the court and things like that. So I think that's also pointed out the last time.
Are members okay with this one? Are there further comments? Mr. Mdo.
Yes, just a quick one, because that comment was made that the word director would be defined and in terms of the law. So if it's defined, then we know everybody understands what it is. Just want to know whether they're going to, the lawyers are going to change that, or should we ask them to do that, or how the process is going forward.
It is defined. Madam Khalif.
The word that is not defined is the commission, and now there's a new division that we propose to define the commission. But the director is defined in terms of the law. And then, as I said,
Dr. Lewis.
Perhaps just for clarity for members, the definition of director in section 213 in the Principal Act is also read with section 118 of the Principal Act, which outlines the responsibility of the director in assigning commissioners, assessing duties, and managing. So with those two, with section 118 and 213's definition of director in the Principal Act, it provides sufficient interpretation and clarity for the proposed clause. Thank you, Chair.
Clause 27.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 27 and 28 were the two clauses initially flagged with regard to the Superior Court Bill. My colleague and I asked the board and noted yesterday that the Superior Court Bill has been set for programming to be considered by the House, just maybe to alert members to that fact. Our concerns still stand with regard to the mandate and Schedule 6, and that we have advised that it is our opinion that the falls in the Minister of Justice's constitutional competency. Chairperson, that is our constitutional concern raised. We take direction from the committee for that.
And if it is at that level, we are sure that it's going to be dealt with this year.
I think it's a sure thing, but it's a provisional schedule and it has been set. But we can't say how this is for sure. Anything could happen.
Then we can see whether we're doing in sessions or. Honorable, I'm listening, I'm looking at body language and listen, looking at hands. Marama. Oh, yeah, the body language. Dr. Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. Just to reiterate, our advice was for the committee to reject the clauses based on our constitutionality concerns, and that will remain regardless of when the Superior Court bill is finalised, because our concern was with regard to competence, and that it's not the Minister of Labour that has the competence to introduce this, regardless of the fact that it's a carbon copy of what is in the Superior Court bill, but that competence lies with the Minister of Justice. So just for the record, Chair, our office's advice from a legal perspective remains that there is a constitutional issue here and it should be rejected on that basis, on the schedule set concern that we raised. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other issues that members elected? Ms. Williams, State Law Advisor.
Thank you, Judge. I want to flog a dead horse, but just to add that our office found nothing unconstitutional about the provision. And we advised the committee to maybe consult with the with the Justice Portfolio Committee, and maybe to have some sort of synergy to work out who will take it forward. Because we are of the view that the Justice Portfolio Committee may be best suited to deal with it. But not because of it's unconstitutional, but because that they are amending other laws relating to justice, so they may be best suited to deal with them, but not as basis because of unconstitutionality. Mm. But that's between the committee and justice, so it would be a good thing for this committee to consult with that committee to see who best to take it forward to avoid some sort of conflict or clash, to say, okay, they going to take it forward, they do it, and we need to do it, we take it forward, they reject it, to have some sort of agreement or understanding with that committee. Thank you.
Flagging a dead horse is like trying to resurrect the horse. Maybe it will go to the fields and plow again. Thanks, sir. Raising it.
Thank you, Chair. Post 29, no legal issues identified.
Are there issues that members would like to raise on this? Next. Clause 30.
Similarly, Chair, with clause 30, no legal issues identified.
Member want to read on this one. Thank you. Next. Clause 31. Link to 27 and 28. What do we do with that one?
Chair, we linked it due to the phrasing in Schedule 6, which stated that the competency of the Minister of Justice lies with the rationalisation, but it extended to management as well and administration of the courts. That's why we flagged to Clause 31 also with similar concern that it might be beyond the scope, because we don't know what is currently happening in the Superior Court Bill and what the committee there has, what the Minister has proposed for possible amendments. And also it goes to the Minister's constitutional responsibility to rationalise. So we flagged that concern, Chairperson.
Thank you. Clause 32.
32, Chairperson, no legal issues identified.
Is it that members would like to flag? Reason? Okay, thank you. Clause 33.
Clause 33, similar concerns as with clauses 27 and 28, Chairperson.
It remains the same. Okay.
Chairperson, then also a similar position then relates to clause 34.
Yeah, and 34 too, okay. On 34, I'm interested. Clause 35.
Chair, there was a legal issue identified in clause 35, say for a drafting proposal. that engage under in sub B be deleted and employed in terms of being inserted into the A list. Thank you.
Are there other issues that members want to raise? Nothing. Clause 35. Clause 36.
And Chair, with clause 36, we have a mere explanatory note on the request of the committee to point out the policy or the reasoning of the court in Fry's Nettle that was stated to be in contradiction with the legislator's intention, so that remained a policy decision to be taken by the committee whether to restructure the clause to give effect to the legislator's intent, but no legal question or no legal issue identified. Thank you, Dave.
Are there matters that members would like to raise on this for attention later? Thank you. And clause 37.
Certainly, Chair, clause 37, no legal issues identified.
Are there matters that members want to raise flat? Clause 38.
Clause 38, Chair, has now been supplemented by the department. It has been popped. I'm following the department's proposed amendment in sections 193 and 194, but in a different parking lot.
No. When was this? Last week. They got the A, what is it called already? A. Yeah. Everything from 38.
Everything is done from 38 to the end.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Baya. And what's the time now? We can still push before. Yeah. I remember our son suggesting that we knock off for the day. Let's meet tomorrow. Same time.